Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that goes into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Heidi Hole Williams.
Jerk. You can't start a joke from before we started recording.
And then I just did.
Dang.
That's why you made
I got
eye
played.
Made eye contact. That's also, how we got you. I didn't look at him.
Speaking of pain in our rears, Amy, intern Amy. I'm sorry, manager, intern manager Amy is also with us as
not
well.
Not managing intern. I don't know what it is. I'm going to change it every week, I guess.
We all guess. Anyway, we have a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped Marvel film that is actually creating a divisive audience between a lot of Marvel fans, and that is the Thunderbolts. So stick around as we dive into that, get into the nitty-gritty, and talk about it. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us them opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
Week!
On all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram and threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
Wee. That's right. We got a website. If you head on over to filmlosophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out over wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers and give us a like or a subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes,
we have.
Please.
We have. We have.
Yeah.
We will give you the social links at the end of the episode. This has been a long time coming as we've all been anticipating this film for some time, and some of us have been more excited than others, especially when it comes to Marvel, because Marvel just tends to create the divided audiences wherever they go. So we are going to be delving into that conversation in a little bit. But before we do, I wanted to play a little game.
Oh, thank God. It's not conspiracy theory.
No.
Oh. Spencer, we're safe for at least this time.
At least this time.
So this is a game where I feel Spencer is going to do actually pretty well. Hopefully. I got money on this. So
with who?
Apparently his bookie takes money on the...
Every bookie takes money on anything.
Oh, that doesn't make me feel good.
There is money to be had in anything. So here's the game. Essentially, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a bizarre, obscure movie title. Now, you may have heard of it and you may not have. Again, this is where I think Spencer might actually kind of excel at, you know, this.
Kicking my butt.
Because Spencer just tends to lean towards the more obscure movies and he watches them. And it's like, he doesn't tell anybody until it comes up in conversation when people are like, oh, did you know there's this movie? And he's like, oh, yeah, it's this, this, and that. Yeah, I saw that like 5 years ago.
Bring it up sometimes.
The Amazing Bulk. That's that all I have to say.
Just watch the trailer.
That's all I needed.
You got it. Mm-hmm. And you're better for it.
I don't know if you're better for it, but so what we're going to do is I'm going to give you a obscure, bizarre movie title. What I'm also then going to give you is three different plots. Your job is to figure out which one is the correct plot.
Okay.
Now, we'll go one at a time to each person, and everybody will have what we're going to do, Family Feud style. So I'm going to, if I go to Spencer, I'm going to give Spencer Spencer an option. And if he misses it, I'm going to jump over to you, Amy. Yeah. And if you miss it, obviously nobody gets it because
you get it.
The
and
last
you win.
One is, yeah. And we'll
that's
do.
That happens. It's either you or me or it's always him.
We will do up to the first person to get to three.
Okay.
Okay.
That's good.
So let me get this ready with what I'm looking for.
Hey, we don't have to make weird noises this time.
I know.
Where we were very close to, we're like,
Gonna get our own buzzer system next time.
Okay. Are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Okay. This. Let me go ahead and get the music ready.
There's here we go. Music.
Yeah, of course. I knew it.
All right. This first movie comes to us in 2003. It is called Tiptoes. Plot number one. A washed-up actor is forced to relive his worst movie roles in real life before discovering they were never real. Okay. Woman, you need to put your phone down, cheating. Put it down. Plot number two. An alpaca with amnesia thinks it's a famous detective, which turns out to be just simply a baking competition. Or, last but not least, a woman discovers her boyfriend's family are all dwarfs, including his twin brother, played by Gary Oldman, on his knees. Spencer. Which one is correct?
Like, I can't even make sense of that second one, so I'm going to go with the third one, even though that sounds like a bait.
Which one's that one?
The one with Gary Oldman on his knees.
No, it's the Gary Oldman. It's Gary Oldman. You got it right.
That's you got it.
So you've heard of this movie.
The only reason I heard of it was because Gary Oldman did an interview with Stephen Colbert recently, and he brought up Tiptoes, and I was like, why does it sound so familiar? And then when he said Gary Oldman, I was like, yep, that's it. As soon as he quoted an actor, I was like, that's it. That's the one.
Well, all right, so that's one point for Spencer.
Thank you.
No alpacas.
All right, Amy, it's your turn. You ready?
No.
Hey, go.
You got this.
This music.
This film is titled Night of the Lepus. From 1972. Plot number one.
Wait, Lepus?
Lepus.
Can you spell it? Sorry, I have a grape in my mouth.
Lima Echo Papa Uniform Sierra. Can I continue?
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah, thank you. Sorry.
Okay, plot number one. A giant mutated rabbit terrorizes a small Arizona town. Scientists scramble to stop the fluffy invasion.
Fluffy invasion.
Plot number two. A small town bans music, but one teen refuses to stop playing, using his guitar to bring the masses together. And last but not least, a lonely taxidermist discovers a magical object, which turns out to be a utensil used in the kitchen. Okay. What is your choice?
I'm going to go, first off, again, one and three are sounding so fantastic. I can't. And I've never heard of a lepus as a utensil. If you had said a taxidermied like animal, I would have been really in trouble. So I'm going to go with the rabbit as in lupus lepus. I'm wrong. He's speeding to the buttons.
There you go. You got it right.
Hey!
All right. So it's tied one to one. Okay. So, Spencer, we are back to you.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Your film is called Manos, The Hands of Fate from 1966. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
It feels kind of redundant.
An ancient board game traps players in a disco-themed alternate reality.
Yes. I want it to be that one. So
that's
badly.
Amazing.
That'd be hilarious.
Plot two. A family on vacation becomes trapped at a lodge run by a cult that worships a demonic figure.
There's a lot of movies for that one.
Or three. An alpaca with amnesia thinks it's a famous detective. What is your choice?
That'd be hilarious if it's that last one with an alpaca. It's Manos.
It's the hands of fate in an alpaca.
Remember, it's Mano, so it's not technically English.
Yeah.
So
it's the second one.
Which was
The one with the family getting stuck somewhere.
In the cult?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
That is also a movie I watched.
You've seen it?
I've seen Mad.
Yes. This is amazing.
Absolute nonsense. Because like when you started it with the title, I was like, yeah, I've seen that. And then I was like, I couldn't tell you what it's about.
Well, there you go.
You're like, again, proving my point. Why are you bringing this up? I've seen it.
All right. Well, Spencer has the lead now. So, Amy, you need to catch up.
Can we figure out some not?
Here we go. We are looking at 1987's Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
All I'm seeing is Tom Selleck.
I know, me too.
Mustaches everywhere.
So, first option is two female secret agents battle drug smugglers and a killer mutant snake on the islands of Hawaii.
Okay.
Second one is a former astronaut opens up a smoothie shop in Hawaii.
That's just it.
Well, there's more to it, but I don't want to give too much away. Or last, a cursed sock puppet manipulates a family into building a pyramid in Hawaii before discovering that he wasn't real all along.
Why wouldn't you give me the rest of the second one?
It's your time to choose.
He like...
Now, you know, that could always be a him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the first one was the ladies in the drug busting in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Second one was astronaut in a smoothie shop in
Former
Hawaii.
Former astronaut opens a smoothie shop in
Third
Hawaii.
One is Sako. Sako the puppet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay, and it was Hard Ticket?
Yep, Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Great. I'm gonna go with two, even though I want it to be one. The astronaut in a smoothie shop. I fell for it. Yep. It's them ladies. Spencer.
I am going with those ladies.
Yeah.
All right. Spencer with the steal.
It's such an 80s thing, right? Yeah. We're like, Tom Selleck, are you there?
For
Wait,
what?
Spencer won.
Spencer, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No,
Spencer,
he's already won.
No, I know. So if you let me finish, I was going to say there's one more that I want to see if Amy can get because I feel like it's right up Amy's alley. All right. This one is kind of interesting, but...
Kind of interesting. That doesn't make me...
It's from 2005. It's called Funky Forest, The First Contact.
Just the lack of like understanding from that title.
Funky Forest, The First Contact. Mm.
A washed up actor is forced to relive his worst movie roles in real life. An avant-garde Japanese comedy with loosely connected surreal vignettes involving aliens, dance battles, and other things.
It needs to be that one.
Or a submarine captain and a mime must stop a volcanic eruption. Funky Forest, The First Contact.
I need it to be the second one.
Which one?
Japanese vignettes and dancing and fighting. Spencer, what button is he hitting?
I don't know.
Hey!
Well, either way, you still lose. Spencer is the winner.
I was fine with that. It was that whole thing where you took the pause off the astronaut with the smoothie shop. And I was like, this sounds like a DCOM. But when he stopped, I was like, man, never mind. It could totally be possible for the 80s.
See, the 80s was a magic time where a lot of movie people did drugs. And so they made all sorts of nonsense movies.
It's true.
Just, oh, man. So much. So much we missed.
Good job, Spencer. You win.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know what you win, but you win. Yeah. So. And mind you, The whole mentality of this game was just to really kind of emphasize the fact that it doesn't matter what the title of a movie is, if you listen to the plot can take you in different directions. Just like this movie with Thunderbolts, as we soon will talk about, and how things go as we dive into our review and conversation of Marvel's The Thunderbolts. Is it The Thunderbolts or just Thunderbolts?
Thunderbolts.
Okay, Marvel's Thunderbolts. As we dive into this film, obviously, we're going to be getting into the nitty-gritty, and we're going to be talking about our thoughts, as well as, you know, some of the opinions that people have had thus far. But before we get into any more further, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
After finding themselves ensnared in a death trap, an unconventional team of antiheroes must go on a dangerous mission that will force them to confront the darkest corners of their past.
Directed by Jake Charrier. And written by Eric Peterson, Joanna Callow, and Kurt Busiek. The film stars Florence Pugh, Sebastian Stan, Wyatt Russell, Olga Kurylenko, David Harbour, Hannah John Kamen, Lewis Pullman, Geraldine Viswanathan, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Couple key pieces about the film. Jake Charrier, the director, compared the film's dysfunction to the mismatched team-ups in the film's 1992 film Reservoir Dogs, the 1998 film Ronin, as well as 2011's Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. He also cited 2010's Toy Story 3 as an influence for his character's dealing with obsolescence. That's sad.
Right.
Another piece of information. The original soundtrack for the film was composed by Sun Lux, who also composed the score for the A24 hit film Everything Everywhere All at Once. The film's working title was labeled as Oops All Berries, after an American cereal, obviously. And then the last piece of information, which is also very important, is that this is the final film of Phase 5 for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. So as we dive into this, obviously we are going to be getting into the nitty-gritty of, you know, specific parts about the film, things like that. So we are going to have spoilers, as it has been already, 2 weeks since this movie has debuted. So yeah. You have been warned. Spoiler alert. So let's go ahead and talk about this film. So we're looking at how many Marvel films is it at this point?
36.
I mean, 78 didn't sound off either. You said 38?
36.
Okay.
And I'll double check, but I believe it is 36.
So we're at 36. We're at like over a third of 100 movies going into Marvel.
36, crazy. I'm correct.
Good job.
Yay. I shouldn't know it, but I did.
Is it just me, or is it not surprising that I didn't even know we were in like the tail end of Phase 5? I didn't even know we were in Phase 5 altogether.
That's because ever since the end of Phase 3, it's nobody just been knows. What is a phase? What's right? Going on?
This is like those years that people talk about when they get older, and it's no longer about a birth year. It's just like, oh yeah, that happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with this, like, we couldn't tell because of the way that it was stacked, because phases originally had been defined by movies, and now it's movies and TV shows, and we're like, huh?
Yeah, I really feel like they're starting to get into the comic book problem of it all. Of like where people do like characters a lot, and then they're showing up in places that they're not expecting, and then they've missed something.
Yeah, and that's, I think, some of the problem that's been very consistent with the Marvel TV shows is that their perfect example, what was it? I think it was Daredevil Born Again. There's a couple of characters that show up in there that you have to have either seen a movie or another series to actually be like, oh, I get why you're here, what your relevance is. Versus like some of the Marvel movies in different places, you can go in and be kind of like, I don't know anything, and still be okay.
I don't recall anybody from the movies being in the series.
No, but it was someone from another series.
From another series.
Yeah, and he's in a movie.
You want to spit it out or?
Well, I don't know if people have seen Daredevil Born Again, and if I'm ruining.
We approve spoilers for Thunderbolts, Khan's
dad. Well, that's a TV series.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about. But he was also in the Marvel's movie. And he was in the Miss Marvel TV series. So technically, he's been in both. Thank you. Hacha-cha. Yeah,
that's a stretch on the movie part. I would say
Charlie Cox was in movies as well as TV shows.
I would say more so the TV show. I don't know if he's known for his movies. That's like
he's so obscure. The MCU.
That's like that one guy who exposed himself in Teen Wolf. He's known for movies,
You asked a question. He's in the MCU, and if you didn't watch the Miss Marvel TV show, and you watched the movie The Marvels, he's in there.
Yeah.
So ultimately, they're kind of creating their universe to be a little bit more complex than it formerly was. And at this point, with everything interlocking in terms of storylines and, you know, timelines and universes, we're coming up to a point where we're eventually going to get some type of implosion of the universes of the timelines with the upcoming Secret Wars, as well as Doom story thread that everybody's been hearing about, especially with the, what is it? Doomsday? Avengers yeah. Doomsday?
Mm-hmm.
The announcement of that particular film. And then of course with Fantastic Four, first steps coming out as well. Bringing in such an iconic villain like Galactus, who is an eater of worlds. It does give the kind of hint that something is going to be eliminated in terms of timeline. But as far as this film is concerned, this movie is quite different than the main thread of most of these other films, as outside of Bucky Barnes, there's not really a lot of consistent people that we have followed an immense storyline with. Everybody has either been either in a short series or has had a few appearances here and there. Florence Pugh's character has only been in probably like three different things. She was in the Hawkeye series, but she appeared
in Black Widow.
And then
what about Taskmaster? Did Taskmaster show up in anything?
The Black Widow movie.
She was the villain.
In.
Man, I don't remember.
And
Black
then
Widow.
Ghost.
She was at the, yeah.
Ghost is in Quantumania.
No, Ant-Man and the Wasp one before.
Yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Oh, that's right.
Quantumania is the wrong. No,
it took me like half the movie to be like, where were you from? Oh, yeah, that.
Well, and see, I literally pulled up the original slate for Phase 5, and it was only supposed to be for like a year and some change, and went on for 2 years. And I'm like,
I mean,
some of these things you moved around, homie, and I don't remember that. And they also took Blade off Phase 5.
Yeah, that's
so mad.
And then they had that gap year, except for Deadpool and Wolverine.
Which even then they're like, yeah, we threw it in here. We just had to put it. I was like,
So at this point, ultimately, we're looking at a mismatched group of individuals in this particular film. We're looking at storylines that were dropped, storylines that were redirected, storylines that are meant to be important, but nobody really cares, you know, and I don't say that to be disrespectful. I mean, that's ultimately how they've carried this film. I mean, take a look. Has anybody re-mentioned the Eternals?
Like, besides me?
Some people have.
No, I mean,
really
actually people who make decisions in the MCU.
Oh, no.
No.
I'm not saying people.
Not in the MCU proper.
Yeah, there hasn't been, like, outside of Deadpool and Wolverine, who mentioned the adamantium that they pulled from the, or no, I'm sorry, that was Brave New World, sorry, who talked about the adamantium that they are mining for in the giant, what are they called?
Celestial.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Spencer's got this, and I was like, yes, Spencer, let's
go. Well, you're looking at your phone.
Yeah, so because anyway, I'm checking to see what's on the slate for Phase 6.
So we have three movies currently. We've got Fantastic Four. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, Fantastic Four, Doomsday, and Secret Wars. That's it.
Yeah. Not to mention the new TV series that are going to be coming out with
Ironheart.
They've just started, or they're actually in production for season two of Born Again, Daredevil's Born Again. There's a lot that's going on within this particular section of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's, you know, timeline, so to speak. So at this point in time, with all the different convoluted storylines that are happening, this movie ultimately takes a step away from the main thread, a step away from our main heroes and whatever they're doing, wherever they are, you know, in whatever timeline they're in, and kind of focuses on people who were essentially set to be a one and done type of individual in a storyline and then moved on. So, let's talk expectations. I want to know what your guys' expectations were before coming into the film. Let's start with Amy.
So I'm aware comically that the Thunderbolts are actually a team of bad guys, and they're led by, what is it, Zemo? And so it's like they're being bad guys, and they kind of, you know, fall into helping out people and being heroic. So I was trying to be like, okay, they're not going to do that. I specifically only tried to watch, I think, two, maybe three trailers. Like, I really did two. I can't remember. I watched a third one. I tried to avoid it because as soon as they mentioned Bob, I was like, and we'll talk about his relevance and his character later on. But so expectation wise, I was like, oh, that's a heavy hitter you're bringing in from the comic books. Now I don't really know what to do, but also because this was in such a weird space with all the Avengers already having happened and everything that's going on, we're like, what other stories do we really kind of have to like fill in the gap? So my expectations were very low.
Yeah, especially when you're taking into mind and like keeping in the frame of mind that this story still has to tie into the overall story. So it's like, how do you take something as obscure as the comic version of Thunderbolts and insert it into the current MCU timeline and then make it relevant with who you have, you know, as far as storyline? Like, obviously all the characters, oh, this is so-and-so from this movie, this is so-and-so from that movie, this is, you know, whatever. You're like, okay, there's a certain, like, there's a certain smidge of, like, recognition. But outside of that, like, how do you incorporate that story into this and make it fully relevant to the overarching Marvel, you know, great plan, so to speak? The ineffable plan, if you will. Spencer, what were some of your what were some of your expectations?
Listen, really, my only question coming into this movie was this: why the heck does your marketing material include a giant Wheaties box in my movie theater?
It's a very nice
Wheaties I don't know what that has to do with anything, and so that was my main question. I was like, I doubt they're going to answer it, and I was shocked when they did.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's an expectation. So, I mean, when it comes to like movies like this, as far as like my expectations, when it comes to movies like this, you know, first off, the marketing for this film was very persistent. Like at first it trickled in and it was like drip marketing here and there. It was letting people know like, hey, you know, this is the teaser to the trailer, and then this is the trailer, and this is the second trailer. And it's like, okay, you know, obviously marketing 101. And then it started getting to where like they were dropping trailers like every week.
Okay.
And this is like 3 months out before the film even dropped. It's like, come on.
Okay, here's the thing though. You say this is marketing 101, but I'd also like to remind you this is the same company that did Brave New World's marketing probably too. And that marketing was much worse.
It was really bad. So as far as expectations, I was kind of in the same boat with Amy. As soon as they showed a blonde haired individual named Bob or an unknown person in this group whose name was Bob, I immediately shut down watching any further trailer because there's really only one important person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe named Bob or Robert. And it's like,
pull back.
Like you immediately, like from a perspective of too, like even this much is too much as far as marketing. I literally got to that point after the maybe second full trailer. Like I was like, nope, I cannot see anymore. And then the sad fact is like the trailers were everywhere, and not just were the trailers, but the small little vignettes, like the 15 second vignettes were everywhere. The images were everywhere. And then they started literally stating the character name of this person in marketing.
Really?
Yeah. In like, oh, not check out.
It was on this. The giant Wheaties box.
Yeah. It was like, check out the blank trailer. Like, it's like, oh, you know, the name of the actual character, the name of the actual hero. And it's like,
oh, that's crazy.
Why? Yeah. Like,
now it's just as bad.
Yeah. And mind you, that was only like midway through that 3 month time frame because it still continued. And it's like, why? Why are you doing this?
Well, that's so interesting that you and I have had very different marketing like things, because like after that trailer came out with Bucky shooting the limo.
Yeah.
Kind of radio silent after that.
You?
Yeah, I stopped really seeing it.
Maybe they know that you don't like...
I'm like, being targeted in reverse.
The house's mouse is like, don't send them anything, huh? Like, so it, for me, it was just like an inundated, like, weekly thing of like, oh, check out the new trailer for Thunderbolts, or look at the, it was always something that was like bringing me back into it, to where it's like they were trying to show me something else and I'm like, I don't want to see more, I want to see the movie, I don't want to see more, I want to see the movie.
You know, you're ruining my dinner.
So no, it was sweet. It was one of those things where it's like this went from too much, like even that amount is too much, to where it was overtly too much marketing. And mind you, there's a level of this they could have done where they pulled back quite a bit and still just rehashed the original trailer and done something more promotional wise, like something more unique, something more fun.
I have to ask you a quick question.
Yeah. Now,
were you seeing all this marketing on Real Shorts?
No, thank God.
That was a very good question.
No, it was
not. This message.
I've gone cold turkey for at least 2 months. I've not seen a single Real Short movie.
Good for you. So, we'll get you a chip.
But you've said it, so now I'm pretty sure Big Brother's probably heard it. And it's like the moment I get online tomorrow, it's like, by the way, check out Man Who Gets Beat Up by Girl Finds New Woman and Learns to Love Her. And like whatever something.
No, it's going
to
be the Thunder Shocks with like a whole bunch of discounts.
The Thunder Shocks? Yes. We're getting t-shirts, guys. We're the Thunder Shocks.
Oh my God. So,
at least
so
it's not Lightning Blast or something like that.
As far as expectations, I honestly, I felt like there was way too much marketing that I was trying to still hold back from being exposed to too much so that I could still have expectations. But the fact that there was so much thrown out there, quite literally a lot of the, I felt at the time, I felt a lot of the bigger moments were being highlighted in the trailers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why are you showing this? Like, why are you showing people this? Like the scenes where obviously Bob as the character is doing things and causing people to disappear in black skid marks. Like, this was in trailers and you can see it. It wasn't even like they weren't even hinting towards it. They were blatantly showing it to you.
And if you knew, you're just like, well, now you really have just taken any enjoyment that I have. Like, you know, it's coming.
Yeah.
Okay. I figured out part of the thing.
What?
I started doing something new. So when I go to the theaters and I'm by myself, you guys aren't with me. Uh-huh. I'm wearing earbuds through the trailers now.
Like, so in other words, you can just look down at your phone and when they're done, you're like, the lights are going out. Okay, I should look up.
Yeah. I don't know about that. But okay, sure.
When I don't need to see some of this. Anything, something flashes on the screen, it's like Thunderbolts, nope, skip.
So let's dive into first impressions as far as we saw the film quite a bit of time ago. We saw the film our first thoughts right outside the theater. Let's start with Amy.
This is the best Marvel movie I have seen in a good long hot while, and it is so fantastic. And when they released it, very nice choice with what they were trying to push across and releasing it in the month of May. I had questions about it, and then I was like, ha ha, I got you guys.
Okay, we're going to have to revisit that. I'm not too sure what you're talking about, but in a good way, too sure. Spencer. First impressions.
Ooh, this was fun. It's been a while where, like, you know, I've seen a Marvel movie and I haven't been like, what the heck was that? Or, you know, just kind of like mildly confused. I mean, I guess Deadpool and Wolverine was the real last time. But like, no, this movie was fun. And like, you know, like they tied everything back together. I know why there's an asterisk. I know why they're on the Wheaties box. Like, I like everything to have. Like there was a point to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I have to agree. It was pleasantly surprising, especially with the stream of films that we've had thus far. The last, what, 4 or 5 movies that we've had? Well, maybe 3 or 4. I'm not too sure how many I've got, because I know you have the Eternals. You have Quantumania.
I'm talking about what's in like phase 5?
Phase 4 and phase 5, because I have no idea what even existed. Because I'm assuming the Infinity Saga ended after phase 3, right?
Yes. And this is called the Multiverse Saga.
And this so far is made up of phase 4 and phase 5, right?
Yes.
So what movies have been dropped from phase 4 to phase 5?
Hold on.
Moved from 4 to 5?
Well, like all the movies in phase 4 and phase 5.
Okay, so we've got Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, No Way Home, Multiverse of Madness, Love and Thunder, Wakanda Forever. That's all 4. For 5, we've got Quantumania, Volume 3 of Guardians of the Galaxy, The Marvels, Deadpool and Wolverine, Brave New World, and it ends with The Thunderbolts.
Yeah, so about half of those movies, just in the last 6 of them, I think a good 2/3 of those were probably not great. Probably not the best they could have been. And in all honesty, if you look at the last 2 phases altogether, the trajectory of good movies haven't been like on point consistently.
Mm-hmm. Consistency, I think, is the biggest thing that we need to address, because this is another one where you're just like, where were you? Like, deciding to show up here. Like, Volume 3 for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was something that was entirely unexpected as well for a film. And then when you see The Marvels, you're like, I had high hopes for The Marvels. And I was like, oh, man, you guys really just couldn't figure this one out, could you, guys?
And
guys?
I'm still mad about Black Widow.
I know!
That should not have been in Phase 4!
Oh, my gosh. It should have been scooted up so much.
It should have either been, like, the end of 2 or the beginning of 3.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when, like, she was still alive.
When it actually, like, super mattered. Yeah. No pun intended. But even, like, I think that's been our biggest problem, is consistency within the phases, especially for the films, because you're kind of here, there, and everywhere. Because Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness is in here too for phase 4/phase 5 something.
Yeah.
And you're just like, and that's why I get the Quantumania and Ant-Man and the Wasp all hibbly jibbly, because I don't remember which one goes where either.
Well, I mean, they're both titled Ant-Man and the Wasp, but the first one is the first Ant-Man and the Wasp.
But again, I get them all hibbly jibbly because I can't get them organized correctly in the timeline, question mark. Like, there's Shang-Chi was great. I loved Wakanda Forever, especially with what they tried to do with the story and the passing of Chadwick. But then, like, The Marvels is another one where I'm just literally like, and they're characters I love. And I was just like, oh, no. Don't do it, Charlie.
Don't. We're not going to Candy Mountain tonight.
Well, they will steal your kidneys.
But I mean, like, the problem is the consistency that isn't there. This particular film.
Okay, so, like, another problem is that, like, people are not watching all of the shows.
No.
And the movies are tagging the shows, and it's really weird because, like, I have been lightly following Hideo Kojima because he does light movie reviews despite being a game developer, so it's pretty interesting.
Well, and, seeing as he's worked closely with Guillermo del Toro in certain things, like, it makes sense.
Yeah. But, like, when Brave New World came out, he's like, when did Falcon become Captain America? Did I miss something? And, like, you didn't see, like, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's just kind of out of nowhere that he's Captain America now. And
yeah.
It's, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's kind of a big ask to, like, have people who are going to the movies be like, hey, watch this at home or you're going to be lost.
And
nobody
just
likes homework.
It expands, like, again, it's traversing too close to the problem that DC had for a long while, where DC had the expectation where you needed to have read X, Y, and Z to fully grasp or appreciate this scene, or to fully, you know, comprehend what this particular moment in the films means, or whatever X, Y, and Z. Like, we're treading too close to the territory where the amount of homework becomes just ridiculous as far as, you know, when it comes to understanding what the films are trying to say, or the main plots of the film, or the main, you know, focuses. That's a really great point. I had totally forgot about that, you know, because you get now into a space where if you hadn't have seen, you know, what is that series? Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
You would ultimately miss out on who, you know, Wyatt Russell's character is. Mm-hmm. You would miss out on the reasoning as to why, you know, that whole back and forth between him and Bucky in this film was so unique, you know, understanding why, you know, Bucky and Sam Wilson's character are closer than they were before, outside of the whole back and forth with Cap back in like Infinity War, or was it Endgame? I think it was Endgame. But either way, like we have now this whole, you know, this whole dynamic of what this universe needs to look like with the perspectives of all these other elements. Like, I'm pretty sure that, well, who knows, because it was such a popular series, but like, I'm pretty sure there are people who are still wondering where Loki is at this point. And it's like, you know, Loki is everywhere, like, to be quite frank, but you wouldn't really understand that concept if you haven't seen the show.
Yeah. They're really getting to the point where they might just need to start doing previously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you could.
Just like the Spider-Man animated TV show, like previously on Spider-Man. Like,
yeah, I mean, if you do any type of a Marvel recap, just like you could do a 7-minute Marvel recap and be like, everything you missed or what you need to know or who you should keep an eye out for. And like, it would make sense, especially like, nobody watched Secret Invasion. I can tell you, I turned off Secret Invasion after after the third episode. And I was like, I wanted to get on board with Secret Invasion because it's the comics are so great.
Mm-hmm. I only heard the complaints about the AI generated title sequence.
It wasn't just that. Like, it was very frustrating. And when they are melding the two and trying to entwine them in such a way that they support each other and create this longevity of push and pull or ebb and flow of viewership, all it's doing is, like you said, people hate homework, and it is making so much homework where you're like, ah, I get that joke. That guy was from such and such. Oh my gosh. Like, it robs people of an opportunity just to enjoy what they're coming in for.
And again, that's again something where DC was struggling with for a long while, especially with those first eras of their film, you know, rushing things. Ultimately, that entire DC, what was it, DCEU?
Yep.
The entirety of it had pretty much, you know, sabotaged itself with creating those moments where it's like, oh, well, you know, this and this is reminiscent of that and this now. And it's like, now I'm good. And with Marvel, we're getting to the space where it isn't so much focused on the comic book aspect, but they've incorporated so much within their shows that rely
heavily.
Well, they have heavy implications on the film's trajectory. Like for instance, like you mentioned with Secret Invasion. Like, that entire storyline should have been saved for a future film once we had more people involved. Mm-hmm. But the usage of it at this point in time, just because we had Skrulls introduced into the main storyline, was not justified at all. And in fact, it created more uproar and backlash because of it, that there are subtle mentions people are interpreting certain things that are said in certain films as like, oh, they're talking bad about that series because it wasn't a good series. Like, I believe it was, wasn't it in Brave New World or no, I'm sorry. It was in the Daredevil Born Again series.
The one that said, could it have been a Skrull? And I was just like, these are jokes for movies, people. Like, this is where they're supposed to live. Yeah. Like,
and the problem is this, is that not every series is bad. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are some phenomenal series, TV series out of Marvel that have just really done a number on expanding the universe's, you know, fan base and, you know, the demographic, you know, from people like those who fell in love with WandaVision to Agatha All Along, people who got a chance to witness the like the awesome wonder that is the Loki series. Mm-hmm. Even things like the Hawkeye series. The Hawkeye series was good as well. It incorporated a lot of new things that you didn't really know. It furthered along and bridged the gap between the Daredevil series and brought it to the Disney Plus platform by incorporating Kingpin into all of it. There's a lot of great things that you know came out of it, but the other side of it is that there was no consistency in carrying the information from one medium to the next. And so when you get to things like this, where it's a hodgepodge, back to what we were talking about with Thunderbolts, when you have a hodgepodge of things like that, it can get difficult to track all of that. And I think one of the great things as far as an outcome, kind of as I move this conversation along, is that this movie didn't require you to have all your homework done beforehand, because if you were fresh into this franchise and you jumped into this movie, obviously with some prior knowledge of Marvel movies, obviously.
I mean, but if you knew who Bucky Barnes was, you could kind of come into this pretty safe. Like, if you hadn't picked up the last time you saw Bucky was literally Endgame, and you're like, oh, he's a senator now? Okay, I guess that kind of makes sense. But like, you really didn't have to deeply know anything, which had a very Guardians of the Galaxy-esque type of vibe on it.
Absolutely. So jumping forward, let's go ahead and talk about the cast of this film, which, I mean, obviously some of the key players here, like our main focus on Florence Pugh. Florence Pugh is always fun, and she seems to always look like she has a blast on set. Getting a chance to see her again after her run in the, after we had this whole entire conversation about TV shows, her entire run in the Hawkeye TV series was, I wanted more of her from that. And luckily we got a chance to follow up with her from there in this film. Which again, going back to what I stated earlier, in order for you to kind of comprehend where she was going in this storyline, you kind of had to have seen how that series ends.
Well, you had to see the Black Widow movie. Let's just be honest. You had to see the Black, when you see the Black Widow movie, the person that she is in the Hawkeye series is wholly different than, not like crazy wholly different, but is a very different point from the person she is at the end of Black Widow. And then coming into this film, like, so if you'd watched.
Well, I didn't finish Hawkeye, so I didn't see her in it at all.
Oh,
yeah. So I've only had.
You would have been delighted.
So now that I've seen her, I'm like, I need to go like, back and watch this. But I don't really feel like I was super lost with her character.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And that's what I mean. Like a lot of her fun current state, like where she's still dealing and reeling, like where we come and find her at this point. That's kind of how we meet her in the Hawkeye series. Mm. Yes, you know, there's a sense of, you know, following her story from the end of Black Widow, which is kind of a stretch, but still it does create the bridge. Either way, you don't need to have the expansive like part of Hawkeye to really, you know, fully unveil that whole arc, because even with an amount of knowledge from Black Widow, it's still good. But she seemed like she was great in this film. Like, honestly, I truly feel like she's going to be somebody who is going to stand out in future films as far as a leader and as far as a key character within this next leg of the phase, hopefully, if they take it that way.
Yes.
Was there anybody else you guys wanted to highlight? I know there's a slew of them, and I want to give you guys the space.
Spencer, you want to go first?
Okay.
And before you say anything, and I'm looking at Amy because I know Amy's going to do this, we'll do Lewis Pullman at the end, so don't.
Okay, I'm okay with that. Spencer can still go first.
David Harbour. Oh my goodness. Like, I liked him. I briefly remember his Red Guardian character from Black Widow. But in this, he is just coming in full throttle and I am here for it. Yeah. I really want to see more of him in like the MCU because he's freaking hilarious. He just knows how this character works. And he is like, you know how many Yelena memes I've seen across the internet since this movie's come out? It's been fun just watching him be a ridiculous dad, but not really.
Well, and the fact that like the marketing for, again, going back to the marketing, outside of all the ridiculous trailers, they've also done little clips here and there where like he goes to the Avengers campus and he ends up like as himself, as David Harbour. And he ends up running into the Red Guardian.
He's the only guy for the Thunderbolts that actually has a masked character currently in Avengers campus at California Adventure.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
oh, that's interesting.
Because they cycle Captain America, they cycle Black Widow. They usually don't cycle Yelena, but literally they're like, Disney was like, the Red Guardian's going to be there.
Isn't there a Bucky?
On one, like onesie twosies on occasion.
Mm.
And Sam comes through a lot too, which is kind of nice. But
but he's not in this movie.
No.
So,
I could be happy.
No, I'm just saying, like he's not in this one. But yeah, he is. He looks like he is having. So back to what I was saying about those clips. He is absolutely ridiculous in that, in those clips, because he's literally running into every single superhero, and he's like, you can tell he's looking for him as soon as he sees him. They do the like, that kind of thing. And it's so funny and so hilarious and heartwarming. And David Harbour just, I think at this point in David Harbour's career, I feel like he's kind of surpassed the B character type opportunities, and now is like completely in his own to be a leading man in just about anything he does. Mm-hmm. He's had opportunities before, but I feel like this is one of those ones where hopefully he sticks around in the MCU. Hopefully they don't choose to kill him off. Hopefully, you know, as far as his role, he looks like he's having fun.
Yeah.
And honestly, like between all the videos of him and Florence Pugh, where like they do the whole, you know, how well do you know each other and stuff like, it looks like they're having a blast. So, Amy, was there anybody you wanted to highlight?
Okay. For Wyatt Russell. Okay. We got to talk about the Russell kid. His dad was the Living Planet, and now he is America's.
He is Timu Captain America.
Well, there's literally, they were doing a press junket with everybody, and they said if Chris Evans is, you know, Captain America's insert butt region, then he is, and goes, what are you? And he goes, I'm America's butthole, essentially. And I was just like, Wyatt, you figured yourself out, this buddy. Like, he's the person I genuinely love to hate, because he mm-hmm. just represented everything that was wrong. Again, if you'd seen the show for Captain America mm-hmm. and the Winter Soldier, he was everything wrong with the ideal of this. Yeah. And here he's just literally Captain, you know, Timu Captain America, like. He's a lesser Logan Paul. Like, he's
No.
That's pretty harsh.
No, that's not even close. No. See,
but it's like he comes with that like extra pompous, just arrogance to him. And you see how he grows. And I think that's part of like when we get to stories. But this is one of those ones I was like, okay, but you figured out you're a butthole, and you're here to be a butthole, and you're going to be a butthole to everybody, and you're really good at this.
I'm still on this whole Logan Paul thing. Like, what? But
I think the best white guys look the same to me.
Okay. I feel like even with his character and the aftermath of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I feel like this movie does a really great job of establishing kind of where his trajectory has gone, especially in like the banter early on, establishing he was a Captain America, but he's now no longer a Captain America, and the disgrace that he ultimately carries with where he's at now, working for Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character, which I'm not going to go through that whole entire name.
I almost said Vanessa, and that's not her last name.
Valentina.
Yeah, Allegra De Fontaine. Yeah. But you had to do the day. De Fontaine.
I feel like Wyatt Russell's U.S. agent in this one gives us more of the kind of view into where a lot of people had hoped if Falcon and the Winter Soldier had continued on, like to see some semblance of you know, rectifying his character, because mm-hmm. obviously when we leave off with him from the series, he is disgraced. He's now working for Valentina, right?
Yeah.
He's now working for her at the end of that series, and it's like, okay, we know he's headed somewhere. But even without that information, I think this movie does a really great job of setting up that storyline, and I feel like Wyatt Russell does a really great job of creating that complicated, like Amy mentioned, pompous yet troubled individual who has used like this other version of the super soldier serum to become what he is now. He does a really great job.
Yeah. At the end of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I really didn't think much of that character. So I was kind of surprised to see him brought back. But man, Wyatt Russell does a fantastic job with him, because you do want to see him punched in the face really badly.
Yes, all the time. You're just like, you just keep punching him in the face. It'll be great.
Such a jerk, especially to his own family.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I had one more to bring up before we get deep into the paint. Geraldine Viswanathan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she plays Mel, who's the assistant to Valentina. And first off, her flirt game with Bucky, so strong, so fresh, so good. And it's like, girl, he's been alive for forever. And it's just cheeky enough, but she also, her character performance is so great where you can't tell if she's there to help or she's there to hinder. And she balances on both sides of that line so kind of fluidly that I was like, oh, you're doing a really good job. Mm-hmm. I like you. Why don't you come join the Thunderbolts? Like, we'll figure it out. You can do something. But yeah, when she was flirting with Sebastian Stan, Bucky, I was like,
But she wasn't flirting with him. She knew he was coming over for a reason. And that's why she's like, I know what you're doing. Like, no, don't do that. I know what you're doing.
She's like, still flirting.
Uh-huh. If that's what you consider flirting, okay.
She's like,
I know what you're doing. Don't do it. I know what you're doing. And, okay, hey, you know, to each his own. I really have to say, I feel like they did, before we get into like Hannah John Kamen's character, mm-hmm. I just have to mention, they did Olga Kurylenko dirty.
Oh my
Taskmaster.
God.
Yeah.
She did so quick.
I know we're probably, when we get into the more details, like, everybody else was, you know, will have a little bit more depth in terms of conversation. Let's just say Olga's whole character as Taskmaster is literally short-lived in this film, mm-hmm. in the most ridiculous of ways. I don't know if that was intended.
Of ways. Like, it was just mean. Like, you're on camera? Great, you're on camera. You don't take off your mask. You're gone now.
You're dead. Yeah. For her being in so much promotional material, yeah. I was like, this is awful.
Yeah. I just got to state that. If there's one major gripe about this movie that I have, it's that, like, they did her character dirty. I'm pretty sure they did the actress dirty because I'm pretty sure she was on press tours, mm-hmm. and she did the press junkets with people. She had to travel around to do interviews. Can you imagine being in a press interview and people asking, like, how does your character, what did you love most? And you were just in the movie for like 15 minutes.
Oh my gosh. And you're just like, hey, yeah, no, it's great. It's
we had a so great fun. Time. I look forward to the next one.
Like, we hung out at craft services all the time. It was so fantastic. Oh,
my first fight scene. I mean, like, I could just do that all day.
I mean, I literally, she's like, I literally killed it. It's all good. I did so great. Kind of going back to our current list, obviously, Hannah John Kamen, who played Ava Starr.
So good.
She did phenomenal. It was really great seeing her continue. And one thing to note, like, this film does a really good job of, if you're not familiar with the current storyline for most of these people, they do a really good job of giving exposition enough to where, mm-hmm. it's not overly enough, but it's just the right amount to keep us kind of engaged and informed with these characters. Because I know her particular character is from, as we mentioned, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which was from a while ago.
Yeah, wasn't that like 2016 or something?
Yeah.
Which is wildly too long to go between infants.
I was like, if it was, dang, that's a long time ago. But I think, no, it should have been like 2017, 2018.
Probably 2018. I'm hoping. Let me see, where is it? Ant-Man and the Wasp, 2018.
Yes, thank God.
Nicely done.
But her role in this film, like, I feel like there was so much more meat to her character in this one than in Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm. I felt like I got more of a chance to know her as a character and not just her backstory in that other film. And again, that's an Ant-Man film. They kind of were just that.
Slapdash. The word is slapdash.
That the first Ant-Man movie was great. Second one was okay. The third one was like, no, nobody needed to see. What's his name's butt? What's his name? Morbius? No, not Morbius.
MODOK.
MODOK.
Oh, I forgot.
Him and his.
Oh, that's right. MODOK was in that one. Oh.
Yeah.
Poor MODOK.
Yeah.
He was actually a really fun character. That's really bad.
Well, that's why, like, the Patton Oswalt version of that one is actually probably better.
Okay.
It's Patton Oswalt, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, her role in this film was super good, and it fit the entire narrative of the group as a whole, creating that whole redemptive, you know, bad guy to good guy kind of vibe. So, and of course, we come to the gentleman that we all want to talk about, which
is
Lewis Pullman, who played a character by the name of Robert Reynolds,
Bob.
AKA Bob, yes. Lewis Pullman, if you're not familiar with, is the son of famed actor Bill Pullman.
But he's out his dad's shadow. Like, there is no question about it.
Yeah, he's done some phenomenal work in the past. I don't know if you remember, Spence, he did Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh.
He was the bellhop.
Oh, okay.
The one behind the desk who was constantly trying to ask Jeff Bridges, who was a pretend priest, to, you know, let him confess his sins to him.
And then the pivot at the end of that, woo!
Yeah. Which, I mean, that was a great movie. Yes. For it being so kind of obscure during the time when Chris Hemsworth was known to play Thor and all these other individuals were like, it was just a Avengers kind of esque bringing together of like hit people, hit actors and actresses. I mean, Cynthia Erivo, Jeff Bridges, you know,
John Hamm,
the people are Dakota, Dakota Fanning,
Dakota Johnson,
Dakota Johnson,
Dakota Fanning is a small blonde girl.
Dakota Johnson was in that movie.
And she was actually decent.
She wasn't, she like leaps and bounds.
And mind you, the reason why it's so fresh,
I was in Madam Web.
Yeah.
No.
This one actually went, I was like, oh, she can, I think this is where she gets the reprieve for Madam Web. Just this. I don't remember Madam Web. Like, it was that moment.
I don't know how you could forget Madam Web.
I'm choosing like that filing system from the SpongeBob episode. I'm just choosing. Lighting things on fire.
File close.
The what? I'm sorry, the what?
There's a, we'll talk about it later. But yes, Lewis Pullman. Oh my Lord.
By the way, the reason why that movie is so fresh for Amy is she just saw it a couple months ago.
Yeah, so. It was fun. So. And it's good. I did see him in something more recent than that, which was he was in Apple TV Plus or Apple Plus, whatever they're calling it, show called Lessons in Chemistry, across from Brie Larson. And he was so mild mannered and so like nonchalant and lovely in that. And then seeing this, I was just like, oh, yeah.
And then he was in Top Gun Maverick,
where he played a guy.
He played another Bob. So.
Which I haven't seen Top Gun Maverick, but in this film, he is hands down, like, there's so many strong people in this, but he is, I can honestly say, one of the standout characters, just period.
Well, I think we need to establish at this point in time in the conversation who Bob is, because but before we do that, you have to understand kind of what this character represents. So during the high time of comic books and whatever, there was a short series. It was just a graphic novel, actually. I don't think it was in singles.
It was a short series. It was a limited 2005.
Yeah. That was created. No, I think it was before that, because the trade.
It originally started in 2000, but the trade came out in 2005.
Yeah, the trade came out in 2005, but the story itself.
2000.
Yeah. So there was a story about a gentleman by the name of Robert Reynolds, who comes to find out that there was more to him than, you know, in the storyline. It comes to that he's actually somebody more important than he really understands. And the way that story progresses in the graphic novel, in storyline, in comics, is so beautifully told, and it's so wonderfully, you know, expressed as to how much it incorporates into the not just Marvel current universe, but the Marvel universe as a whole. And we're talking about going back to the era of like the First Family old.
Before the First Family old.
And so it comes to find that Bob is actually a hero known as the Sentry. However, in the course of that, Bob also comes to learn that the reason why he doesn't remember who he is because his other, I guess, mental part of who he is also his greatest foe, which is an entity called the Void, which is kind of like the, if you think of it in a certain way, it's kind of like having bipolar disorder. Like, you have one persona as you, and then the other side of you is the Void. And as Robert gets stronger as the Sentry, the Void becomes more and more present as a threat. And so the reason why he went into, that was the reason why he pretty much created a device that would make everybody in the entire world, including himself, forget who he is.
So he's constantly living in a state of amnesia, wakes up a little bit, starts remembering, and then has to redo it all over again.
Yeah. So.
And he was, and this series was, so the Sentry is a fairly new to comics history character. He was created by Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee in literally the 2000s for this series. And so he's literally a 25-year-old comic book character.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's a 25-year-old comic book character where he's established. Mm-hmm. However,
he goes back to even before, like, the Fantastic Four were around, before the X-Men. Like, and that's part of the beauty of this story for this limited run.
Yeah, for this limited run. Like, yeah. It goes back again to when the first family was established. Like, it's revealed in this story that he and Reed Richards were best friends. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting in how that all transpires. And of course, since that inception of that story, which was a great story, he then had other appearances as the Marvel comic universe continued, and he would show up in storylines after the fact, being a mainstay character in certain runs. So bringing that to the forefront of this particular film, Bob, it's not the same Bob, however, the same progression of understanding the unstable mental nature of Bob and how him coming into his own powers is also establishing the power and the scale of grip on Bob of the void. Mm-hmm. And going back to the actor himself, Lewis Pullman, to be quite frank, when they first announced that they were looking at creating a movie about, by the way, this hero's name is the Sentry. I don't know if I've established that. Yes. When they first mentioned that they were talking about doing a film about the Sentry, Marvel had announced that at first they were looking at Steven Yeun, mm-hmm. which, if you don't know who Steven Yeun is, he's of infamy from The Walking Dead as Glenn. He's done a ton of other things, but
was this pre or post Invincible?
Pre.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was very pre.
He worked with the director on Beef.
Mm. Yeah. And so those were conversations that were on the table. And then ultimately, I guess it was just a wash and it never happened. Fast forward to this. And obviously we're watching trailers, and the moment that he goes, "I'm Bob," comic book fans around the entire globe knew exactly who he was.
There's not a lot of Bobs in Marvel at all, even like his aliases. So when he's like, "I'm Bob," and he's super timid, we're like, danger, danger, back it up.
Well, the problem is that not just that, but then, and even in that trailer, like I said, at that point in time, it's, even though it was only like the second major trailer, it was still too much. The very next clip that they show on that is him getting shot up, and then, you know, the bullets all falling on the floor and his feet floating off the ground. It's like, okay, that solidifies it. If you don't know, now you know.
If you know.
Yeah, if you know. So for people who were unaware of who Lewis Pullman is, it drew a lot of criticism from a lot of people who were like, well, this guy, you know, I don't know if he could play this role, this character is this and that, blah, 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 and whatever.
He's not muscular enough. He's not handsome enough, blah, blah. I was like, I'm sorry. Y'all haven't been reading like The Room at all. Just let people, let them cook. Let's find out what happened. Just leave them alone. Yeah.
And to be honest, after watching this movie, I can't really see anybody else play this role. Lewis Pullman does an exceptional job, not only at playing the hero side of this character, but embodying the villain side of this character as well. There is nobody that I think has the emotional spectrum like Lewis Pullman. Because even if you remember from like Bad Times at the El Royale, like he just expressed like internal turmoil with so much ease. It was like turning on a light switch. Like he would flip it on and you could just see this guy is suffering from some type of grief and internal strife that can't really be expressed in words, but he does it through facial expressions and the tears in his eyes. And you're like, yes, this kid, at the time, this kid knows what he's doing. And as time has gone on, I, and myself, I haven't seen the Top Gun Maverick as well, but I'm sure he did well on that, because we get to this point and you see it, and recognizing how they take the approach for this particular character to show how, number one, how he's come to this power. Number two, how the void has come to being present in his mind. Like, you're like, okay, show me. And as he does, it's like, this is the only way to go. Like, in all honesty, they couldn't have done it the other way. This is the only way to go. And Lewis Pullman is again, one of those actors who I think was one of the few people capable of pulling this off, especially at his age. There are probably older actors who probably have the more nuance or whatnot, but they don't have the profile for this particular character. Why are you looking at me weird?
Because he's the same age as us.
I'm saying older characters. Like there's a lot. Lewis Pullman does a lot of work in this one in terms of, again, expressing that emotion and whatnot. Like, for his age, he has a lot of skill as somebody who's been doing it for like 40 years, 50 years. Like, I feel like Lewis Pullman just is a well, you know, established actor. He knows how to do his job well. And sadly, there are actors who are probably older than us that still don't know how to do it right. And the fact is like Lewis Pullman, who is probably around our age.
He is our age. He's 38.
He knows how to do it, and he does it well, you know. And the fact is like he, it may be genetics. He might just be able to get it from his dad. But the
we're gonna expect an Independence Day speech from the
century. Heck yeah!
If we got one of those, oh Lord.
The one where he bounces back and forth between the century and the void. Lewis Pullman just to with no pun intended, pulls it off so well as far as like this particular role that, again, I don't think anyone else could have done it. So
agreed.
Jumping into kind of the story aspect. So it's pretty straightforward, you know, a band of misfits come together to stop a global threat. I mean, that's pretty much it.
But first, they've all been tasked to kill each other. Mm-hmm. That's how the best friendships start. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. I was trying to get it right because they're literally all hired to kill each other. They get trapped in an underground bunker. They accidentally open the door, like open a box, and there's Bob. And everybody's like, we kill Bob. And Yelena's like, no, Bob's cool. Stay over here, Bob. And Bob's just like, I don't know what's going on, you guys. And I'm like, we don't either, Bob. It's okay.
Sure. So talking about this film in terms of like some of its implications and kind of that, Amy, you have a note here about Mental Health Awareness Month.
Yeah.
So why don't you kind of talk about that regarding the story?
Yeah. So the entire month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And the big underlying current of this film is not only mental health awareness, but it is it's just mental health in general, not only in talking about with. And it's with all of the characters. Sadly, Olga, you're out of this, mama. But like with everybody save, you know, even Valentina. There's a little bit, we have a moment with Valentina with Julie. I can never pronounce her.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Thank you. I can never pronounce her full name and I feel bad. Everybody is struggling with some aspect of their mental health through this. And you see as the story progresses how each of them not only comes, and it's not even fully comes to terms, but you see how they've been coping, you see what they've been hiding, and then when people choose to reach out, choose to actually have conversations about what they're feeling, there's multiple moments in Act 3 that are just like, they rip your heart out, and you're like, oh no, I get it. And so if there was one thing that the marketing team did right, they put this puppy right at the beginning of Mental Health Awareness Month. And I was like, okay, I get it. I get why you didn't drop this in July. Like, gotcha. So, yeah.
Yeah. And to be quite frank, like we get, as Amy mentioned, there's plenty of moments where this movie touches upon mental health. But I feel like that culmination of how this movie reaches its climactic point is kind of the epitome of that battle, for lack of a lesser word, so to speak, you know, that we carry within our fight for mental health. And it's true. as much as this movie is a action Marvel film, it's also a great, almost like, you almost want to say like metaphor, example, story, parable, whatever you want to call it. It touches upon the importance of mental health and recognizing that just because they may look okay doesn't mean they may be okay. Mm. And it's funny because I saw this and it reminded me, I don't know if you guys ever saw that mental health commercial about the two friends who go to soccer matches together, and one of them seems quiet and the other one's super loud and boisterous, and it just shows like them coming back. And again, it's the same two friends, and it's like one guy seems like kind of down and quiet and the other guy's like super loud and boisterous and everything. And it goes on and goes on until the last clip happens and the sad guy shows up and his loud and boisterous friend isn't there. And he has his scarf and he places his scarf on the seat. And then it's like, if you don't ask, you won't know. And it's like, you know, you, it's true. Like people like Bob in this particular sake, like if you don't talk, if you don't show that, you know, people care, that you can care, it removes the whole intention of like, well, things like that happen. Like you're going to have to be aware that sometimes people aren't always able to talk about it. Sometimes you have to ask and you have to, and the funny thing is we have a great example of that here at this table. It's like Spencer and I, we've been friends for a very long time. And it's like when it comes to Spencer, thankfully not so much now, but before, and transparency wise, like we've all gone to therapy. We've all done therapy. Spencer has done therapy. I've done therapy. Amy has done therapy prior to Spencer going to therapy. Cause I'm not going to lie, it is a little bit more difficult now, but back then the telltale signs that I would see because of knowing you, I could tell like things were going on. And instead of me keeping quiet about it, I would always bug you and say, okay, what's going on? Talk to me. What's going on? And I would bug you to the nth degree.
You would.
Every time. And the fact is like bugging you wasn't only because I liked annoying you, but it was because I was,
it factored in a little bit.
It factored in a lot of it. Let's be honest. It factored in a lot of it, but still the other aspect was because if you don't ask, you won't know, you know, and it's recognizing that some people, you know, suffer in silence. And, you know, with this particular film, you know, there's some great scenes that happen in this movie, but I think one of the more iconic, and I say iconic because it speaks to the overwhelming theme of this film. One of the scenes is, you know, Elena having a conversation with her dad, with the Red Guardian, Alexei. And they're talking about, you know, she's like, I can't do it. I don't know. And he's like, well, you know, I've always been here or whatever. I'm here. And he goes, and she's like, you were never there. He's like, Natasha. After Natasha died, he goes, she's like, you weren't there, you know? And it was hard and it was really difficult. And it was like, and she's like pouring herself out, telling him that, you know, she just needed him to show up. Mm-hmm. And the fact is like, that's sometimes the biggest thing that people need. Sometimes people don't need, you know, the right words. Sometimes people don't need the answers. Sometimes people don't need, you know, great gestures. Sometimes they just need people to be there. And that is the great gesture.
Which that also is echoed when we have a confrontation between Bob and the Void, who at this point, he's no longer the Sentry. The Void is fully taken over. The Sentry is essentially hibernating, but it's Bob. And Bob just needed somebody to be there. And you can see, like, There's manipulation things, and Bob has not glommed, but been drawn to Elena because she's treating him almost like, not fully like a little brother, but she treats him with it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. They have a conversation about being depressed too, like together. And she provides hope to him in such an organic way that when the time does come to face down the Void and she's there with him, it's enough to bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not just her, it's everybody. And it's this whole concept that when people are in crisis, the ones like just showing up can be what they need to get to where they are okay. And it is such a, like, that third act, man, they came in swinging. Yeah. And I was like, I did not expect any of this, you well, people.
Well, and you take a look at, like, even in the pursuit of this film, the character of the century is such an OP character in the comic books, mm-hmm. that nobody can, ultimately, he is so powerful, Spencer, that at one point in the comic books, they highlight that his power is so immense that he is able to rip Ares, the god of war, from the top of his head to the bottom of his bottom, and rip him in two.
In twain. Ripped in twain is the best way we can.
Not from bottom to top, from top to bottom. Like,
with the helmet.
Yeah. And we're talking to god of war. Like, anyone else is just paper compared to that. His power is so immense. And then comparable to that, the void's power is just as immense. Obviously, as we see in the trailer, he literally just has to look at someone and they turn into, you know, dark skid marks on children's underwear, like stuff like that. Like, seriously, it's bad. And they don't sugarcoat it in the movie. Like, there are some really great scenes I don't want to talk about because I want people to really have, I want people to have that moment that you and I had, Spencer.
We were both.
we were like, like, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. But to battle something like that, this movie took the approach of focusing on it being that mental battle, that internal battle, the battle of the mind, so to speak, where it is, as Amy stated, like the recognition that sometimes the strongest battles are the ones that are done, you know, internally, or the ones that are, you know, you fight against yourself, quite literally. And that's honestly the only way this movie could have traversed. And to do such a thing, you have to be able to recognize a lot of those traits and a lot of those elements of, again, mental health awareness, recognizing, you know, the need for, you know, community, recognizing the need for, you know, reaching out and checking in on people and making sure they're okay. That whole third act, as Amy stated, was a hodgepodge, like, treasure trove of things that you could just pull and say, oh my God, this could represent X, Y, and Z, and so forth. Because there's a lot that it shows and highlights for each individual person. And it's immense, but it's still a part of that mental struggle, a part of the fact that everybody, no matter if you're a hero or not, we all struggle, mm-hmm. you know, and it's knowing that you have the community to rely on to get you through it.
Yeah. And that the community will show up even when sometimes you can't formulate the words. Like, that was something that had seemed almost, especially in the short time that they're together, seemed like it was almost too good to be true. But the fact is, trauma does bond people.
Yeah.
And in this regard, they literally were all going to die anyway. Like, they had been sent to murder each other, and Bob just happened to be there. And it's such a great kind of connection for Yelena, because when we see her, they show it in the trailer. So it's nothing like she blows up something in a building and she's walking away.
Yeah.
And she saved something from the lab in her jacket.
You can say it.
She saves a guinea pig. She went into this lab to blow it up. There was a guinea pig and she's like, oh, hello. And Norm just like, oh my gosh. And they focus on the guinea pig in such an odd way. And then she just takes the guinea pig home with her. Like, and I'm like, she's looking to care about somebody or something again. And in finding and essentially unleashing Bob, it's not like she's like, you're my new guinea pig. But she's like, there's somebody who genuinely needs help. And the best way I can be a hero with everything bad that I've done is just be here for him. Because that's what my sister would do too.
Yeah. And
so many good things.
Yeah, because even to the effect of like how, like in terms of the mechanism that they use to save Bob at the end of it, it's almost a little cliche, but it still makes sense and it works and it hits
Pixar
the point.
Way.
It's like, yeah, like that makes that does it. I do, before we get into highlights or issues, because we are, you know, running short on time, I do want to talk about, and I don't care, I want to talk about the end credit scene.
Okay.
Or is it the mid-credit scene?
The mid-credit grocery store or?
End credit.
There you go.
I want to talk about so the
like Wheaties.
So the mid credit is essentially Alexi is standing in a grocery store in the cereal aisle, and there's a woman who's looking for a particular cereal, and he ends up grabbing a box of Wheaties, which at this point they had put the Thunderbolts on the box of Wheaties, and he ultimately is acting like a spokesperson, is like, hey, you should take this one. It's got all the vitamins and he's like trying to persuade this woman, and she looks at him weird, grabs a box, starts walking away, and then puts the box back on the shelf and runs. Like, it's great. It's everything.
And he's so all clean shaven and so happy. And I'm just like, yes, you got your wish. Like, you are official now. Everybody that had wanted to be on that box for the Olympics, you have made it. It's good, baby.
But we do get to the end credit scene. And oddly enough, I don't know if you guys know this, but the end credit scene was actually directed by the Russo brothers.
Yep.
Mm. So right before this film released, this was filmed to add on to the end of this film while they were directing Doomsday, mm-hmm. Avengers Doomsday. And so in this film, or in this end credit scene, and again, we've already mentioned, spoiler alert, whatever. In this end credit scene, we get this really great kind of updated place of where the team is. They're still currently in the Avengers Tower, so to speak, which Avengers Tower was bought by Valentina and then renamed the Watchtower, which if you read the comic books, you know what that is in terms of the Sentry's, you know, connectivity. But anyway, and so
Bob's okay.
Bob's okay. We get the updated. It's been what, months or
a couple of months to a year, I think.
I don't recall how much time is. Time has passed essentially.
Mm. And oh, 14 months.
Is it 14 months?
I believe so.
So
they've been rebranded. It's been 14 months. They're in Avengers Wink.
So it's revealed that the asterisk for Thunderbolts is they're essentially now called the New Avengers. And so that's why the whole asterisk, Thunderbolts asterisk is there. So in the month or year and 2 months later, we see them still there. They're arguing because Sam Wilson has essentially got his whole team together and they're branding themselves as the Avengers. And they're going back and forth about branding. And then Alexi does this whole thing with like, we're going to call ourselves Avengers with a Z. And it's super
and he
hilarious.
Brands himself. Oh my gosh. Which is a call out to She-Hulk and the merchandising in there. Don't get me started.
So ultimately the Watchtower, so to speak, the Avengers Tower is fully operational and they get this incoming signal that something is entering the Earth's atmosphere. And so they ultimately put it up on the big screen. Bucky is kind of helping Yelena lead the team, so to speak, as it's apparent that Yelena is the leader of this version of
the
Avengers.
She's the heart.
And so as they see this picture of this this thing coming into Earth's stratosphere, and it's blurry at first, and then they start focusing it in, and you look on the side, and it has a 4 on the side. And you're like, oh, okay, the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Which if you have been listening to me at all at any point, I've been calling this. I knew that this was going to kind of happen because of the fact that you have to figure out a way to incorporate those two universes. And seeing as that is a different timeline altogether, they had to
smash them together.
Well, ultimately, not smash, but eliminate one so that you can unify the universes, so to speak. But who knows how it's going to transpire. But
wink.
Yeah. When does Fantastic Four?
July.
Mm-hmm. Is it July?
Yep.
Wow. Right around the corner.
That time.
They were like, hey, do you like the Fantastic Four? And everybody's like, yes, we like them. And they're like, you sure?
Well, and
do you feel like you could use them right about now?
Or here's the bigger question, though. In what capacity are they going to be in it? Is the question. Because
let's see their movie first.
Well,
that's
true.
A conversation for July.
Yeah, honestly,
well, this is the May conversation.
Technically, we don't know how that's going to end because of the fact that it's supposed to butt up with Avengers Doomsday. This movie is butting up with Avengers Doomsday. So this scene is specifically doing the, you know, foretelling as they did with, you know, Captain Marvel in Avengers Infinity War, you know, in that end credit scene with the little pager beeper thingy.
Beep, beep.
Or no, that was in, what was that? That wasn't in Infinity War. Because at the end of Infinity War was the scene with Nick Fury and he ends up getting dusted, right?
Yeah.
That's
with the pager. But he's got the pager.
He's got the pager. And then in whatever end credit scene where they're trying to test the beep, the pager or whatever, and then it just stops working, like, what'd you do? Whatever. And then all of a sudden, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, shows up. She's was like, where's Nick?
No.
I don't remember what that was.
It was an Avengers one because she did show up and she was all mad about it.
I don't know if it was an Avengers one, but.
Because she and Thor had the back and forth thing in the tower with that. I remember that one.
It was
long enough ago. It happened. Yeah, this is. I'm excited for the Fantastic Four because it is the first family. I'm expecting also a bit of an origin story because it's kind of like, let's introduce these guys and how they're important, which is necessary beast.
It was the end credit for the Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah. This makes sense.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and jump over to any highlights or issues. Do you guys have a highlight or issue about this film?
Yes. Okay. I have highlights because it's me. When we get towards the third act and Bob is okay.
You mean at the end of the third act?
No, actually, I think this is in the end, that end credit sequence.
It is in the end credit sequence.
So when they're all there and they're talking, they had the rebrand and everything and everybody's kind of talking. They're trying to figure out what's going on. And Bob is in his chair in the sunshine with his cup of tea and his book and he's reading and they're like, well, what did you do today? And Bob goes, I did the dishes. And Yelena goes, thanks, Bob. Like, it was such a great call to a couple of things. And I've read into it way deeper than necessary. We already know that Bob is struggling and will continue to struggle between if he activates the sentry powers, the void is going to come out.
Yeah.
So he has to keep himself chill and level. But he's doing the best that he can to help be a part of the team as much as he can, which is the dishes, which is another, again, great call out to when you are being mentally healthy is also being aware of what your limitations are and what you can provide and having a team that recognizes, hey, if the dishes are done, that's what you got done today. Hey, you took care of yourself. This is enough. And I was like, thank you, Bob.
Which I have to say, and I know we've kind of harped on this, you know, this thought, this thread for a little bit, but I think so many people forget the importance of recognizing mental health that even when we have a movie like this that states it and emphasizes it, it's actually a great thing, even though it doesn't have like the bombastic, you know, aliens or whatever, doesn't have this or that as a Marvel film. The fact that this movie has the heart that it does and the messaging behind it, that really still sets it apart than most other Marvel films, to be honest. And even if it isn't the A-listers, you know, we don't have Chris Evans showing up, you know, we don't have all these other people. Benedict Cumberbatch isn't showing up with his third eye. Like, even though we don't have all these things.
I forgot he had one of those.
Yeah, he does. This movie still brings us a great performance. I want to mention that because I know, as I mentioned before, this movie does have a lot of Marvel fans divided, and it's pretty right down the middle as far as some people saying, oh, well, you know, it wasn't consistent or it wasn't, you know, it wasn't what I expected or it was a little, you know, all over the place or however. I think it stems from kind of wherever you're at in your place of life. You know, if you didn't really see it, then, hey, that's fine. If you didn't really enjoy it to the level of what it was trying to do, that's totally cool. The fact is like, I feel personally, and I think I could speak for everybody here at the table. I feel like for those who need to hear that message or, you know, want to hear, who are in that state of life where they absolutely needed to hear this message, this movie's for them, you know, and in all honesty, we're in an era where Marvel movies aren't really hitting that button that it used to. Let's be honest. And if you're looking at comparing this movie to the Infinity Saga films, we're not in that era anymore, unfortunately.
No, we've gotten deeper. We're expecting growth. Let's go.
And to the extent also, like, take a look at Guardians of the Galaxy, the first film. Not everybody was on board with that movie. Mm-hmm. Not everybody loved it because, you know, it definitely was a unique take on a group of heroes that nobody knew about. Completely brand new. And yet there were people who were like, you know, it was okay. It was, you know, I'm not too sure about this, blah, blah, blah. You know, Bradley Cooper as a raccoon. What is that? Like,
fantastic.
Dave Bautista's acting again. Oh my God. Like,
and he's good. Yes.
And mind you, people will have their opinions. The fact is, this movie carried, I feel, the same sense of heart that Guardians did. And even if it wasn't James Gunn at the helm, I feel like this one still has a great message to hold. Sorry, was there anything else you wanted to highlight?
No, I wanted to do that one first because I know Spencer's probably got some highlights/issues/stuff that I want to share.
Actually, I don't really, because like a lot of the things I would like to talk about, it's also fun to be surprised about them in the theater. Yeah. It's kind of the problem. Surprised. There's actually a lot to highlight, but like I want to leave surprises for people. So I don't really have much to say.
I think one thing you can say is the fact that there are several scenes in this movie that will take you aback.
Yeah.
Like in a way that you have not been in a while.
Yeah, because when I audibly gasped in the movie,
when we both audibly gasped,
I was like,
I was sitting next to both of you and I heard it like go down and I just looked and both of you mouth agape and I was like, oh,
because I was not expecting certain things to happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they were like, yeah, whatever. We'll kill whoever.
We'll do it. we'll do it.
Surprises. Do you want surprises? You got surprises.
Honestly, we just need Disney to be who they truly are and willing to kill anyone at any point in time.
Yeah.
Make no one feel safe.
Yeah.
Don't deny. When they tell you you're secure, you're expendable. do you have any highlights?
I'm in the same space as Spencer. I think the biggest highlight I can give to this movie is the fact that this movie brings me back to the heart of that first phase. I feel like we're getting reintroduced to a level of heroes that we may not be comfortable quite yet with. And maybe the story's a little all over the place, but there are characters who are having fun. There are characters who have heart. They are people in this universe who may not fit together, but for the sake of the need of the world around them, they come together and do their best. And honestly, there's not much else you could ask of them. And for this particular group of characters, for this particular group of anti-heroes, that's quite literally the only expectation you can have is that, you know, do your best. Cool. And the fact that mental health is such a key, like, piece of their story altogether, all the way from Bucky, all the way to Alexi, like every single person benefits from the conversation of what that looks like, what mental health looks like within the MCU. And, it's crazy, but I have to give it that praise and that recognition. And not to mention like the fact that there are, again, those sequences that just will literally, I can't emphasize it enough. There are moments in this movie where you're like, I'm sorry, what? And
there's a lot of them.
The only complaint I do have, Olga Kurylenko, you know, much like your character, you got the raw end of this deal. I'm sorry. Everyone else got to finish the movie. But yeah, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table. Talk about if the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
So this film does pass. It is for non-comic book readers an unexpected departure from what traditional, air quotes, Marvel has been feeding you for the last, oh Lord, how many years we're looking at this point?
You're talking about the phase 4.
So many.
Since 2021?
I thought you were talking about since the beginning.
Since the beginning. That was 2008, baby. Yeah. Like,
we're almost at 20.
It's been a while. What the heck was but that? It's my terrible impression. Hello. Yeah. Okay. But this really does walk a tightrope of balancing the boom, boom, pow of Marvel with an expectation and a conversation of things that a lot of people are struggling with, a lot of people feel, but they don't want to talk about out loud.
Yeah.
I loved these performances. The soundtrack is fantastic. And I can honestly say I'm excited to see whatever comes next for our... they're not the new Avengers. They're not even the new Avengers. They're the Thunderbolts. I'm okay with that. I'm giving this guy a 4.8 out of 5 monocles because I actually really want to go see it again.
Spencer.
Yeah, this movie passes for me. Really, like, you only need to have, like, a vague idea of who, like, a few people are and you're going to be perfectly fine. Bucky, Yelena, Alexi, and everyone else, you can just be like, yeah. And that actually makes the movie really fun because now you're not worried about, oh man, did I miss something because I didn't watch like the last season of Loki? Nope, you didn't. You're all caught up. But yeah, this movie just kind of stands by itself. Also, we didn't really talk about this. Soundtrack for this movie is actually really excellent.
Mm.
Like, especially the main theme for the Thunderbolts, borrowing a lot of the themes from the Avengers score.
Yeah.
That was, like, a brilliant maneuver by Sun Lux. So, like, you know, he already did Everything Everywhere All at Once. So, like, I was like, okay, we're going somewhere with this. This is going to be fun. But for me, yeah, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. Like, very solid movie.
There you go. As far as myself, obviously this film passes. I had a really great time with it. Yeah, it's not perfect and it is a little wonky, but still this movie has a lot of heart and I do appreciate the effort the filmmakers put into this as well as the writers and all the work put into creating another ragtag team of misfits who are coming to save the day. I really do have to say that as far as the messaging goes with this movie, it really does touch on a special place in my heart as well as the rest of ours here when it comes to mental health awareness and having the foresight to release it during the month of mental health awareness is also a very great job. Like I have to applaud because of the fact that, you know, again, it is a conversation that we all technically should be having as often as we can. And checking in on loved ones and whatnot it's very vital. And to have a movie that's a Marvel film to really re-emphasize that is just chef's kiss. So as far as monocles, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. And yeah, it was just a great effort for this story. And again, this is the type of Marvel film that you really want to see because it really pushes you to want to see more. And I want to see where this team goes from here, especially if they're going to be on any more cereal boxes. So
yeah. But maybe Frosted Flakes instead of Wheaties this time, though.
No, they can't replace.
They can't kick off Tony.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say the same thing. They can't kick off Tony.
It's a partnership.
Alexi and Tony.
Yes.
We're bringing cartoons into this one now.
Yeah. They're great.
Well, that about wraps up another great episode of the Film Losers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosserspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, Marvel films, DC films. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosserspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Play, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, or Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Losers and give us a follow or subscribe. Listen in, tell us what you think, and if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
You can also find us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101 and at Blue Sky at filmlosopherspodcast.bluesky. Over at IG or Instagram, you can check out all of our great extra content such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found where?
The only place he's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And if you are still going, Amy, listen, I've heard this how many weeks in a row. Give me some content. I swear I got some. I just got to put a mic to it. Yeah.
She's got access to the socials now, so it's all on her. Again, everybody is, if you haven't had a chance to check out this film, check it out. It's definitely one worth watching. Everyone is always entitled to their thoughts and opinions. And mind you, if this isn't for you, that's great. Honestly, I know a couple people who didn't agree with me, and that's fine. It's just one of these types of movies where I had a great time. And if you're in this for whatever reasons, if you want to check it out, you may find that you might like it as well. So check it out. And of course, we'll see you next time. So from all of us here at the Film Philosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm the manager intern, Nini.
The?
I don't know. I wanted the. There's no asterisk here.
Well, okay. Class dismissed. All right, are we ready to roll?
I suppose.
We can be, for you.
And to leave you guys with a little bit of advice before we begin, the magic school bus could be in your butt right now and you'd have no idea. We're going live.
Very true.
Three, two, and...